We reached the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, and where do we have more of it than any other state? Oh yeah. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. A must-have book for many in South Central Alaska is 55 Ways to the Wilderness, but it's really past 55 and growing. We're talking Alaska trails today. What is your favorite trail? Phone number statewide, toll-free 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage, 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. The Statewide Alaska Trails Conference coming up next week. The subject today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. If you're ready to quit tobacco or just thinking about it, the coaches at Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line, a free service for all Alaska adults, can support you with Text to Quit, with tools to make your quit attempt successful. Text to Quit helps you stay in touch with your quit coach, use nicotine replacement medications properly, manage those urges to use tobacco, and prevent relapses, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, Alaska Trails is pretty much a professional society of people that make trails, and the executive director, Steve Cleary, is with us. Steve is well-known to some Alaskans because he used to run the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. Steve, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
And the Alaska Trails is having its annual conference. It's been going on for a while, these conferences?
Yeah, pretty much every other year. The last one was out in Palmer in 2011, and we've had several others in our 10-year history, and we're really excited about this upcoming one to talk about all aspects of trails.
And so basically all the trail people, they have a big convention.
Yep.
And they get together, and what do they talk about? Tools? I mean, what in the world are we going to talk about?
Tools and lots of nuts and bolts conversations. We've got a lot of trail experts like Mike Shields, who's worked on trails here in Alaska for decades, teaching class after class on terrain, on soil, on what do you do if things aren't working, and all the kind of nuts and bolts on trails. But the overarching theme of the conference is on cooperation. And so we're trying to bring a lot of people together, both nonprofits, agency people, to cooperate and to network and to plan sustainable trails for Alaska's future.
I guess that makes sense, because we've all seen when a trail is not approached. So when you step, when you haven't stepped back, and it just sort of goes where people's feet went, and then pretty soon you end up with erosion and odd, unsafe situations. I'm going to say right now, you know, I'm asking the listeners what their favorite trail might be, wherever it might be in Alaska, being aware that there are some places there's hardly a trail. It's just be interesting. And I'll tell you right now, my favorite, hands down, is Winter Creek, which I just love. It's out by Girdwood, and it's been shortened now because they have kind of done a lot of trail building on it. But you probably have been down there, Steve. Have you seen that one where it makes a switchback, goes into a little valley, and it has to go right along a hunk of bedrock? And they had to come in there with heavy equipment and just rip away at that rock to try and make some kind of footing, and it's still a little dicey.
It is, and there are certainly some tough spots of trails like that. I had the fortune or misfortune of hiking that before they put that trail in,
right.
So it's and fun
it's
to if it's compare.
Wet. Yeah, if it's wet. It was a bit scary, and it's kind of like, which way do I lean? You know, to put my hand here.
Yep. And that's what we're going to cover a lot at the Trails Conference, is sustainable trail building. And that's what Alaska Trails talks about a lot, because not only is it safer and more fun to hike on a sustainable trail, but it's cheaper in the long run to build it right the first time.
So tell me the when and where of it all.
So the Trails Conference is coming up at APU here in Anchorage next Thursday through Saturday. So that's April 24th through the 26th. And you can register at www.alaska-trails.org.
Is anybody going to take a tour of the ski trails It'd probably be a little, we might need snowshoes or something.
Yeah, that's right. We'll be right at APU, and there's lots of good
one
trails
that's
there.
That's world-class training trails there.
Yep, and we actually have a pre-conference session on OHV trail management out in the valley. That's happening the 2 days prior to the conference. They're going to be on the Rippey Trail out there, but they're still trying to figure out how the field session is going to work out there and how the snow will or will not have melted by then.
So, Steve, how did you stumble on this gig here?
I was at a conference and met Jack Mosby there, a longtime Alaska Trails board member, and it was a biking pedestrian conference at the Park Service building, and Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage were involved, who I am also involved with, and got to talking to Jack, and I was looking for a part-time gig as I was staying home with my son at the time, and kind of fell into this and been at it about 2 years now, and my son's now in kindergarten, as they do, so I've got more time to devote to this.
Some of our listeners will remember Christine Bile, who was on the show about a year ago, and I understand is going to be at your conference?
She is. She is one of the keynote speakers and also, you know, owns a trail-building business in addition with her husband, in addition to being an author. So she's going to be there reading from her book and joining Troy Duffin, who's one of our other keynote speakers. And we also have a evening presentation by Holly Brooks, two-time Olympic skier, who's going to be presenting Friday night at APU as well.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think it will be. We're real excited about it.
Well, joining us by digital link is the very same Troy Duffin of Alpine Trails Incorporated. How are you doing?
Good morning. Good to be with you.
And you're in Park City, Utah at this moment, and I understand that they have an absolutely phenomenal network of trails.
We have really been lucky with that. We now brag about having almost 400 miles of public trails here, and that's in about 100 square mile area.
Wow. And the first word that I came up with when I started looking around researching you, Troy, was pump track, because I'd never run across that word before. And boy, do I want to get on one now.
and we have a few of them in town, and pump tracks part of, I think, what you'd call the free ride movement, which is, to some folks, it kind of encompasses every type of mountain bike riding beyond just what we'd call cross country, or, you know, just kind of riding along a standard trail. So pump tracks and bike parks and downhill specific trails and all things of that nature kind of fit under that general heading. And pump tracks are a big wave these days. We've got a few here in town and more on the way.
Do you think, Steve, maybe you know, are we going to see one of these in Alaska? Do we have one in Alaska? Is this one of these deals like when kids do the skateboard parks where you kind of can make your own if you're really good at it?
I think that's a good visual of kind of a skateboard park, but dirt, and you can cram a lot of features, or I should say build a lot of features, in a small area. I know Ed Kessler of Ptarmigan Trails has been working on one out in Palmer.
Oh, really?
And yep. And there's been other advocates here in town who are looking to put one together. But it's
You been on one?
I have not been on one. I've seen pictures. We should
All right,
defer
let's
to
ask
Troy.
Let's ask Troy. So what happens with this? As I understand it, this has been engineered to the point where there's always these odd little moments on a mountain bike or a bicycle with the roots and the whatnot. And this doesn't have those, so you can actually get some real speed up.
Yes, but not a lot of speed. I mean, a pump track very often is built in a flat area using all imported soil that's then shaped, and the engineering that goes into it is how high and how far spaced the rollers are, so that you enter the pump track typically on a bank turn, pedaling your way in, and then you stop pedaling. And pumping means basically you are pumping with your arms and the handlebars to let your bike continue to roll through the pump track without having to pedal. And if you're good at it and it's built right, you can actually continue on until you run out of energy without having to pedal.
Wow. That's impressive.
You know, it really is. It's kind of a neat concept, and the beauty of these things is that you can do them in a very small backyard. You can do them on the edge of a trailhead. They don't take up a lot of space necessarily. They can take up really as much space as you have, but they don't have to take up much space. They don't cost a lot to go in, and as long as you have good soil and water available to continue to massage it, you know, over time and keep it tamped in. It doesn't take a whole lot of ongoing maintenance either.
Wow. Well, Troy, I want to get a little technical now about trails with you because you're the man. And I guess I will start with expertise. I'm almost thinking that what you're really talking about is a form of civil engineering when it comes to a certain point to get a trail that is going to stand up. It's almost you need the civil engineer's handbook, and you need to know about angles of repose and, you know, things like that.
Not really.
Good.
I'm not going to completely disagree, but you know, when we talk about your typical backcountry trails, you know, the ones that a lot of the ones built by John Underwood and stay up there on the hillside, these were built, I would say, with about 10 to 20%, you know, science or engineering, and the rest is really just art and feel. There's definitely some basic engineering that you have to know, or else, you know, Steve has already used the term sustainable. You end up with something that can be difficult to maintain, not very fun to use, and can just deteriorate on its own with the elements and with use pretty quickly. So, there's absolutely some basic guidelines as far as grade and backslope, drainage features, turn radii for different types of uses and things of that nature. But beyond that, quite frankly, it's really more about the feel and about the art that goes into it. And, you know, Steve is obviously aware of some of the builders up there, as are you. And I know of just three of them, Ptarmigan with Eddie Kessler and Happy Trails with John Underwood, and then, of course, Christine and Gabe. But they all build with a really great level of feel that is what makes your trails good.
And John Underwood of Fairbanks, owner of Happy Trails, will be presenting at the Trails Conference with Troy on mountain bike flow trails, which are another variety of bike trail that are really popular. And along with pump tracks, it's another way of getting more people out. And that's one of the focuses of our conference, is how to get people out on the trails, particularly youth, and focusing on the health benefits that can that trails can bring to them.
Yeah, it's so odd because in some ways, a trail user wants to be someplace where there's not too many people. Probably the answer is to make the pie bigger.
It really is, and you know, it's getting more and more challenging to accommodate all the different types of users. And I don't mean just all the different types of users when you think of equestrian and foot traffic and mushers and skidoers and everything else you face, especially in Alaska, but just the different types of mountain bikers, because there are so many different types of bicycles now, and there are different types of trails to accommodate those different types of bikes and the different types of user experiences. And flow trails is another. I'm glad you guys brought that up. It's as much of a mystery as it is a science right now, because flow means different things to different users. We just did a presentation on this at the Professional Trail Builders Conference in West Virginia. John was with me on the panel, as was another presenter from the Southeast and a Canadian, and all four of us kind of had different ideas of what flow means. So it's an interesting concept, and it'll be fun to explore that more next week in Anchorage.
Maybe our listeners know. They probably have their own ideas of what flow means. At 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. We're not just talking bicycles. We're talking any use, whether it's hiking, with a pack animal, any kind whatsoever. I guess there's even like water trails.
That's what I was just thinking too. Yeah, Dave Brand of the Kachemak Bay Water Trail Association will be at the Trails Conference to talk about his water trail down in Homer, which the idea came from him and some others at the 2011 Alaska Trails Conference. So we're excited to have him at the conference to talk about what they're doing down in Homer.
Well, now, if I'm on the water, I'm basically looking at some landmark, and I'm navigating according to that. What would a trail consist of?
Well, it gives you destinations and places to stop, and then connecting you to services on land. So if people Google Kachemak Bay Water Trail or go to their Facebook page, they'll see ideas of trip itineraries, of maybe a water taxi
But it'll give you the direction, give you like a bearing.
Definitely. They're going to put in maps and things like that. Yep.
Yeah. Troy, you know, I, as you probably know, the Appalachian Trail, which I am most acquainted with, is basically kept up by clubs. And so it varies a lot in how the club has, the clubs have different styles in how they deal with their sections that they're responsible for. And one thing that I've noticed is that some are very lavish with their blazes, and then others are extremely stingy. Is there some kind of rule of thumb as to how you, I mean, the way I would like to see it, I guess, is that when you're standing at one blaze, you should be able to see another one somewhere. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know what? At most places, well, everywhere, really, we start with the baseline being who is your user, and who is your user meaning what type of user, and then what level of user, and then what type of experience are they expecting. Appalachian Trail, yeah, I mean, that's one of the granddaddies, the most historic trails that's been continuous and with ongoing maintenance in this country. And it's a beautiful example of collaboration with clubs and conservation associations and things like that. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about, the lack of blazes, but, you know, I think the interesting contrast is that, at least in my region, the west down here, the lack of vegetation, generally speaking, and even if we get into the thicker forest, the spacing of the vegetation means that as long as the trail tread itself is fairly well established, or the bench itself in the wintertime, we don't need the kind of blazes you're talking about, or signage, if you want to be more formal, for wayfinding. And I just kind of wonder if what you're talking about is a situation where the maintenance and the clearing has not quite kept up with the you know, the visual openness to where maybe they do need to increase the amount of signage or blazes.
Yeah, I think that's usually what it is. It's just usually overgrown to the point where you can't see it. You sometimes have to fish around for it. But, I mean, because it's a heavily used trail, you usually know where it's going. And then, you know, like we have in Alaska on Curry Ridge, they use a cairn system, which is, you know, fairly common, I'm sure, because when you get in a higher elevation that has no vegetation, you're just on scree or whatever, you can follow the trail track, but what if it's fogged in?
Right. Yes. And especially an area like that where you can't really drive posts or can't drive them very easily, and cairn systems are great if you have the rock to do it.
1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Your thoughts on trails, particularly a trail that you are particularly fond of or wish were better developed, or think is overdeveloped or overused, or made too user-friendly or not user-friendly enough, whatever. 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. We've got Troy Duffin of Alpine Trails with us, and Steve Cleary of Alaska Trails. And the Alaska Trails Conference is coming up. Steve, are we going to end up, we sort of are beginning to have it now, where, particularly in the Far North Bicentennial Park, that there's like a trail network, if you can get to that with your bicycle. But the getting to that with your bicycle is still, it's better now that there's Elmore, but nonetheless, it may be tricky. And I guess maybe, Troy, you even know, do they have it to where Campbell now goes all the way to Far North Bicentennial?
You know, I can't answer that question. I assume Steve can, or if not him, the stay or John might be able to. I can't.
Sure. Right now. Well, I know they Troy, you'll see it when you come up. There's a new trail, bike trail, underneath the Seward Highway that took a couple years to complete. And then there's still a section on Lake Otis. I was just actually skiing over there with my son the other day, and we ended up at the playground that's at on Lake Otis right there. But you have to jog a little bit through streets and everything to get back on that trail. But I think that's an interesting part that I'm interested in hearing from Troy about when he comes up, in that, you know, he's in Park City, but I assume that with all the miles of trails they have, lots of their trails start in a somewhat urban environment and then take you out into the country. And I think I'll be interested to hear about that from Troy. But also, one of the main reasons we're bringing Troy up is because of his pioneering work in the economic benefits of trails. And he's been up to Alaska a handful of times to talk about that already, but how developers and how real estate people can embrace trails rather than fight them.
Well, we're kind of seeing some weirdness with that here in Alaska with the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail, where originally the the adjacent property owners were quite resistant to the whole idea, and then they realized their property value went up. All of a sudden, they didn't want to have all those fences and everything, but some of them still do.
Yep. Well, and Troy was up here in 2006 at another conference and spoke to the Chamber of Commerce about, you know, the economic benefits and gains from trails. And so as that proceeds and his work has proceeded, I think there's a real upside opportunity to trails and incorporating them into a community.
Well, yeah, Troy, would this be just because people are getting to like this as a quality of life benefit, or does it actually make money somehow?
Well, I think both. And we've learned the same lessons. It's been great for me, by the way, to have had the opportunity to come up there on several occasions. I've taken a lot of knowledge back from there, as well as the experiences I've taken up to there. But as far as that, it can be a very tough nut to get somebody to understand that a trail in close proximity to their home is a benefit, because if you're not used to it, the first blush is, well, I've heard everything, burglary and fire and personal crimes and voyeurism and anything you could imagine that the fears go through a homeowner or a property owner's mind right off the bat. But without fail, every time a trail has gone in that I'm aware of, property owners have just settled in, and all those fears have dissipated, and whether they use it or love it or not, they at least are no longer afraid of it and do see it as a benefit. And it's for the reasons you've already spoken about and several more. Property values do tend to increase. Quality of life increases because of the access to the trail, the ability to get out and be healthy. And it's a greenway. It's, if it's a developable site, you've taken away the possibility to, you know, put a strip mall there, and you've put a greenway instead. And I would think virtually every homeowner would appreciate that more over, you know, development.
I was having a casual conversation about this the other day and was made aware that they're basically building a multi-use trail all along the East Coast now. And part of the point of it is to actually go through the towns, to not necessarily avoid them. I thought that amazing.
And goes back to something you mentioned a few moments ago, and that is Park City is hardly an urban town, but we do have some fairly urban areas, some very tight areas, and we did take on the attitude here that we didn't want to just do the backcountry trails, but we wanted to connect the trails, call it the last mile, to the homes with an urban style system. And it's a very challenging thing to do. But what we found is that most users really appreciate the opportunity to not have to, you know, put their bike or skis, you know, on or in the car, and to be able to access things directly from their homes. And while it can be very difficult to do in a lot of areas, it seems to be very worthwhile to put in that effort and to connect people that closely.
We got an email from Alan Bent. I asked people to come up with their favorite trails, and he says, well, could you say something about the Healy Ridge Trail? I hiked it a few years back then. It seemed to go on a long way. I don't know it. Do you know the trail, Steve?
I don't.
Yeah,
but
either,
I,
but I'm sure some listener does.
Healy is where Gabe and Christine of Interior Trails live, work, and play, and they'll be at the conference. So I will ask them then to learn about it. Sounds like a fun one.
Okay. David joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, David.
Hi, Steve, and Steve, thanks for the great, great program. I'm calling in just to kind of talk about one of my favorite Anchorage trails, and also by way of kind of a heads up for people that also enjoy the trail, and the trail is the Coastal Trail. Since January of this year, the municipality has been in talks with the airport, which is they're talking about a big land swap in West Anchorage, which, you know, the prize for the airport is Point Woronzow Park, which is contains a section of the Coastal Trail just south of the sewage treatment plant, that nice wooded area that kind of goes just about till where the old compost center is around in there. I've attended all the West Anchorage land trade meetings, and it's very interesting because the airport really wants that park. It's a dedicated city park, And the city, my perspective on it is the city is really going with them on that. They're kind of headed towards some sort of a land trade. So for people that are, and actually most of the trail system in West Anchorage is kind of getting unlocked right now in this process. So the some of the trails that are on Heritage Land Bank land that are ski trails now are kind of in flux. So people need to keep a heads up on the Coastal Trail and the West Anchorage Land Trade Task Force and the airport. And that's it. Thanks.
All right, David. Yeah, I do know my impression was they pulled back on that a bit, but you're saying just for now.
From the truth, the airport master plan was, had this kind of phased in approach.
Yeah.
And they kept in as the final phase the second north south runway, and they said they were going to have all these trigger points before they started pursuing that. But next week after that, they convened this West Anchorage Land Trade Task Force. So don't be fooled by the airport master plan stuff. They are pursuing acquisition of Point Warrensup Park, and it's very wide open right now. And I've attended all the meetings, and I don't see anybody really sticking up for the trails, except for there's somebody from ACE there, and there's somebody from Turnagain Community Council. Yep. But the Muni people aren't really sticking up for the trails.
I see. The usual suspects are showing up. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, David. Thanks for raising the flag on that one.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Alice joins the program from Palmer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Alice.
Oh, hi. I'm enjoying the show, and I'm concerned more about how do the trails committees hope to restore trails that have been created with really low impact, for non-motorized, and then the four-wheel drive. Big rigs come in, and where there might be a little bridge that's been brought in by helicopter to assemble and gravel brought in, they just go on the side, and then they'll just push over trees. The trail that I'm referring to is in the Matanuska Valley between Went Road and Murphy Road. So it's in the Moose Range, and it was a beautiful trail that people were utilizing for hiking and cross-country skiing, mountain biking, and horses. And now people can't even take their horses on it because the ruts are... last summer I walked on it, and the ruts are like up to my knee, and it's just dangerous. People are not using it, and so the trail, it's like a cancer now. It's just everybody gets off the trail to go around that. So anyway, I'm concerned about how do we enforce not having the big rig trucks come into some of these trails, and what can be done to restore a beautiful trail like there. Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Alice. Steve Cleary?
Yep, this is Steve Cleary of Alaska Trails. I'll start out. Sorry to hear about that, Alice. I think that goes back to what I was talking about earlier with sustainable design. There's some trails that can handle some uses, and some, obviously, like the one you're referring to, that can't. And so that needs to go into the design, which then leads to the enforcement of who can and cannot use a trail. But what we're hoping to do, and as part of this conference I mentioned, there's a pre-conference session on OHV trail management. We're hoping to design good trails for off-road, off-highway vehicles so that those users stay on those trails and are engaged and enjoying those trails so that they don't go on trails that aren't designed for that use.
So you basically... create some bait.
Yeah, maybe.
Is that a good strategy, Troy?
Yeah, absolutely. If you create alternatives for all users and make them good alternatives, you've largely solved the problem.
You don't like mud bogging?
I actually like everything, and that's one thing. But Alice has really raised one of the more difficult problems, especially when you talk about non-motorized trail management, and that is, you build a trail to a certain width to accommodate all non-motorized users, and especially if you're accommodating skate skiers in the winter and other, you know, users who require a wide trail, it can be very difficult to keep trucks and other motorized vehicles off of those trails in the summertime. You have to do barriers and things of that nature, which again become for some motorized users just another fun barrier to try to get around.
But, challenge, you bet.
Yeah, you know, it really comes down to unfortunately to enforcement and what group or entity is going to take care of the enforcement. But the good thing about it is that when you get enough numbers of users on those trails, they can go a long way. The peer pressure, the ability of people to, you know, to talk to each other and help them understand what it's for can really be very helpful.
I'm a big fan of the discourtesy sticker. I once parked in the wrong place, and there was a ticket on the front of my windshield when I got out, and all it said is, "You have been given a discourtesy award." You were just discourteous. Do you realize it went on like that? You know, if you can get to the offending vehicle and give them a little thought like that, that's a very nice little nonviolent response means. Self-enforcement.
Yeah, and you know, we see a lot of positive peer pressure on trails, and they're one of those great amenities that, you know, the line, "If you build it, they will come," truly, truly resonates. And, you know, the numbers of the expected or the anticipated or the allowed users on trails really helps keep down the unwanted users on those specific trails, because the peer pressure works. And, you know, it also works going back to the trails close to home sites and other developments issue. Those good eyes, as we call them, really help keep down the issues that a lot of homeowners are so worried about.
Well, the phone lines are really, really lit up for this show, every single one of them. We're probably maxing out. Probably can't do any business up in the office right now. So many calls are coming in. So you guys are doing a great job with this conversation as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Enjoy a lunchtime talk with Dennis Hayes, CEO of the world's most energy-efficient commercial building, on Thursday, May 1st, during the 6th Annual Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference at the Dena Center. Individual tickets for this keynote luncheon can be purchased at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. Clean energy, it's everyone's business. This message sponsored by REAP.
We are talking trails with Steve Clary of Alaska Trails and Troy Duffin of Alpine Trails by Digital Link from Utah, but he's going to be in town in Anchorage in next week for the Alaska Trails Conference, a statewide trails conference. By email, this comment from Jason. This is a thought out here, specific to Chugach State Park. Points: we have a great, huge, beautiful park. Given its size, we have very little decent trails. We have some good ones, though. Most of the good trails are down low, where the bears roam. Well, these are good trails in winter, but in summer, the prudent user avoids these areas. Trails in winter, but in summer, the prudent user avoids these areas, as I just said. We have some access points that all start decent, but once you get into the alpine or back into a valley, they disappear. That's very common in Alaska trails. I noticed that when I got my copy of 55 Ways to the Wilderness. There weren't really 55. There were it was like maybe 30 or so. And then once you had to kind of find your own route. But it was there sometimes. Questions. There seems to be very little support or effort toward connecting these trails. Is this true? Steve Cleary, we'll ask you that. You can think about that. And also, are there any efforts or plans aimed toward the continued expansion of the existing Chugach Trail system, connect and provide loops and through hikes? And thank you for your time and hard work. And yeah, I mean, I guess state budget problem there.
Well, that's a great question. And I did want to mention that my neighbor and one of the authors of 55 Ways to the Wilderness, Helen Nienhauser, will also be at the conference. She's an Anchorage Trail pioneer, and she is on a panel of Anchorage Trail pioneers. So you can come and hear Helen talk about that. But I am glad you brought that up. I've been working with Pete Panarese of the Chugach State Park Citizens Advisory Board, who will also be presenting at the conference. And that board put together a capital request that's before the legislature right now. So you're able to talk to your legislators about getting that funded. But it's for several more access points for the Chugach State Park, some trails, and some upkeep. And they tried it last year. They're trying it again this year. And we've definitely supported it. But I'm not sure that there will be funding for that. But it is the backyard for Anchorage, and it's an important place, and we want to see it both developed and maintained.
Well, it seems also that a mic could make money. I mean, frankly. You know,
sure.
So it's like almost a Chamber of Commerce deal where the people who, you know, cater to that sort of traffic might see it to their advantage to want their clients to have more options and on like that.
Yep, definitely. And we've heard a lot lately, and we've been part of the Anchorage Economic Development Commission's Live, Work, Play campaign, a part of which is trails and highlighting the economic benefits for trails. And they definitely are a draw for people to come up here, but they need to be safe, and there needs to be access to them. And for that, we need money.
I'm not entirely sure we'll ever get over the bear situation, though, there.
Right, and I don't think anybody else is thinking that
right.
Thinking that either. You know, bears are residents as well, and so people need to be bear aware. But yeah, it's not a I don't even know if it could be called a problem, but it doesn't have a easy solution. If
it's a situation.
Yep.
That's what it is.
Yep.
Let's go to Mark. Joins the program from Palmer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mark.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You guys were talking about this just a little bit ago, but I wanted to expand on it a little bit because, what seems clear is it's relatively easy to make great trails that go from our communities out, but it's very difficult to get trails within our community connecting our, you know, the aspects of our community we want to get to. Like,
boy, howdy, you tell me about it. Yeah.
So what I'm really wondering about is what, you know, when we go to the conference like this, and I'm sure I was there when Troy was up here last time, it's kind of a members of the choir talking about how great these trails are, and I would agree with that totally. But
hallelujah.
What are some tips to convince the, say, local policymakers, landowners who are resistant? How do we either get those people to your conference, or what are some strategies to show chambers of commerce or convention and visitors bureaus or whatever that local connecting trails, not the ones going out, but the ones within the community, that we can build now, but it just gets harder and harder to do that as we ignore this. And I'm in the Matsu Valley, so I'm talking, you know, connecting Palmer to Wasilla and the great trail systems that can be in those places. And I'll hang up and take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Let's let Steve start with it, and then we'll pass it on to Troy.
I'll start out by saying there are a lot of great trails out in the Matsu Valley, and we're proud to have the support of the Matsu Health Foundation for our conference. And in addition, there's going to be a presentation on the master plan of the Matsu trails. And so there's lots of lessons to be learned and to be implemented in an ongoing basis. And I think that's one of the most interesting questions for me as I look at the conference, is that interface between what I'll, just for ease of syntax, say urban and rural trails, or connecting cities to the trails, or like Mark said, the trails back into the cities. But I think Troy's going to have some good insight on this, so I'll pass it over to him.
Yeah, and Mark really touched on one of the toughest nuts that we do face, and that is especially in already developed areas, how do you go back and open those up to trails? And the best examples I can show are areas where you have strong nonprofits, Alaska Trails, Single Track Advocates, groups like that, who are out there working on the front lines to bring these entities together and can bring funding behind them, typically thank private donors for that, who can then have something to offer to these reluctant landowners or to the land managing agencies, such as the municipalities and state parks and others who may just keep complaining that they have no funding and they can't do anything. And I'm not just talking about up there in the, you know, in the state parks far in, but I'm talking about on the edges where you do have the opportunity for public lands, but no funding, or again, private lands. And what it comes down to is, what can you offer these folks? And we are lucky here to have had our Chamber of Commerce get on board, and they do help us out and they support us. We have some local funding sources in the form of tourist taxes and things like that. And it's really kind of a full circle approach to where we were able to work with them and help prove up the fact that tourists and other visitors to the area are more likely to get out and use the systems if there is a connecting trail close in. You know, they have to be able to see and touch and feel that. By proving up that value and that that focus, then those groups, and I'm talking again about the Chamber, the Muni, and others, were willing to get behind it with support and funding. And then that led to the ability to offer up things to the reluctant private owners, which is typically money. Frankly, that's often the bottom line, is you can go to them and offer to buy an easement or even buy land in fee to put the trail in that area. Because short of that, who's going to give up their private land? Very difficult thing for people to want to donate that type of use.
Yeah. So easement purchase you're looking at. Now, I love the words prove up. I think that's a good set of verbs there, kind of like ground truth. Let's go to Thomas, joins the program from wherever he's calling from. Thomas, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning, Steve. I'm calling from Wrangell, Alaska today. I also live in Petersburg, Alaska. I'm a Catholic priest, and I cover both parishes in both cities. But I've also lived in Ketchikan and Sitka and Juneau, all of which have fantastic trail systems.
Yeah.
And I'm very... very blessed to want to get out and have the health to still do so, and I try to hike two or three times a week. And my favorite trail is the trail closest to my house, you know, honestly.
Oh, that's beautiful.
in the sense that the one that I can just, you know, when I lived in Juneau, I would walk up the Mount Roberts Trail, which is right behind the cathedral there, and I'd
get
some phone calls while walking through the forest.
Yeah.
And... you know, or go for a walk with someone on a nice trail and do spiritual direction. And what a blessing to have these places that are so close to us, because we live in this beautiful natural world. I moved up here from Southern California, Orange County, California, and there's just a lot more trees and a lot more space up here than where I lived in California.
All right, Thomas.
I did want to talk about those kind of urban trails, like the Juneau Seawalk, that's really getting a lot of people to walk along the shoreline there. And both the Ketchikan Third Street bypass, somebody was thinking when they put that road through that, like, hey, look, we could put a little ladder here and have a nice trail up on this bench, and everyone will have these beautiful views. And I'd just like to thank the people that have been proactive in thinking about that kind of opportunity. I know when we put the widened road out north of Juneau, there was a member of my parish who said, you know, there's money for trailhead parking, and if we get it now, they'll put it in at the same time as they widen the road. And so now we have this beautiful trailhead parking, you know, going further out the road because somebody had known something about, you know, something and could get it done.
Yeah, I guess planning is... Yeah, I think trying to plan ahead is part of what Steve's organization advocates for. And Troy, I'm sure you're on board with that as well.
You know, absolutely. Proactivity is really everything. And you know, if you can get out there ahead of developers who are subdividing or road builders who are road building, with the support of your municipality especially, where you can provide, you know, quid pro, you can provide some benefits to those entities or agencies in exchange for them providing trail, that's the best way to get it done.
Let's go to Diane, joins the program from Anchorage. Thomas, thanks for your call from down there in Juneau way.
Hi.
Hi.
I noticed that Anchorage gets tagged as a very nice city to live in, but mainly because of our trail system on some of the national surveys. Few people know that most of the trails have been built by, you know, volunteers and maintained by volunteers over the years. What concerns me is that we aren't building trails according to our comprehensive plan guidelines or rules, that for every new development that goes in, there has to be some pedestrian facilities put in. And that isn't the same as trails, of course, but at least it does help. And I noticed, and it's just a problem, I noticed every month in our Sunday paper we get something called a Home Finder magazine. You may have seen that, where a lot of, where the real estate people list with a picture and up to maybe 50 words various properties for sale. And in this limited space that is allotted per, you know, per home or property, they always manage to find a way to say it's near the green belt or a park, if it is indeed near something. And I know that statistics are actually, someone has done some statistical analysis, and you can get about 20% more per property if it's near something green. And the developers fight like hell not to put in these connecting trails.
They want it both ways.
Yes. and yet they find enough space in their 50 words per ad to show that it is near something. So how do we convince the city to uphold the laws that say in our comprehensive plan that we need pedestrian facilities, and to and to make the developers realize that they will eventually get more money if they follow the rules?
Well, I think it's kind of, you're speaking of really the implementation that was done with Title 21. And the fact of the matter is, as you probably know, the city of Anchorage is dominated essentially by supporters of the mayor. And the mayor is very much tied in with the Old Line developer and builders community. And so they got the Title 21 that they wanted. So it's going to take a new assembly to go back and run better detail on some of that stuff, I think.
Well, our comprehensive plan, Policy 55.
I know.
But then it's Title 21, the implementation of that code, of that policy, watered it down tremendously. So,
yeah. It's frankly kind of a political thing at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wish that our politicians, when they campaign, that we would ask them the question, what are your feet for?
Oh, thank you, Diane, for that. Thanks for the call.
Do you mind,
Diane,
if I make make a comment to
go
that
ahead,
as well?
Go ahead, Troy. Yeah.
She brings up an excellent point, and it's actually, again, one of the ways that we had some great successes here, and that is you really have to attack this both top-down and bottom up. And it's great if you have politicians at the top level who are behind the cause, but it also can go a long way to have simply staffers at the muni level or others who are willing to fight the fight from within and push those things forward and make sure that things get enforced. And the one example we have here is that we weren't seeing staffers dedicated to trails in our cities and counties. And so we actually helped to create a trails and open space recreation special service district, much like a fire or a sewer district.
I thought you were going to say you all became vigilantes. You didn't quite do that.
We didn't have to go that far.
Uh-huh.
But by creating this legal entity, it's actually a political subdivision of the county, we were actually able to push for the ability to have the recreation district actually allowed a signature line on the plats of every new subdivision. And what that meant, quite simply, was that any developer, in order to get the final approval to build, had to pass that map through the rec district. The rec district had to approve their trail development with their implementation plan before they got their final approval to go ahead and build. And so that gave us some legal teeth for enforcement of these things.
Wow, and that's in Utah, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Wild West.
Troy Duff and his Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. Get away and stay in AK at UAS Juneau, small enough that your professors know you by name, big enough for a vibrant campus community with a new residence hall opening fall of 2014. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
we're talking trails, and I asked people for their favorite trails, and this one from Birchwood Camp, it would be probably the South Fork Valley Trail back to Symphony Lakes. It's awesome in winter and the summer. Trail is in Eagle River, South Fork, Eagle River Trailhead. Hiking only, no bikes. Very nice. Let's go to Randall, joins the program from Willow. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Randall.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. When I returned to Alaska several years ago, serendipitously became involved with the Willow Trail Committee, primarily in the winter. I was a volunteer groomer and attended the meetings. And since we bought our house, I've been so busy during the summer, I hadn't really gotten to explore the area. And late last fall, Steve Charles, who heads the Willow Trail Committee, and a local geology professor, Sue Morgan, invited me to join them on a hike on Kasagi Ridge. And it already snowed out here, but had not stayed. And that day, it was a bluebird day, and it was one of the most spectacular places I've ever been in that trail system. Just marvelous.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, I've been up there. It was all Germans up there. It was amazing. Nobody spoke English.
Well, thanks for thanks for the call. Steve Charles, I'm glad you brought him up, just called me yesterday, and I owe him a phone call, but he's going to be presenting at the conference as well, talking about the Willow Trails Committee and how on partnerships, really, and communicating and working with other trail groups. So thanks for that mention. And that's another great part of the upcoming conference, is we'll be talking a lot about partnerships, collaboration, and trail groups working together.
You're getting lots of shout-outs here, Steve. Let's go to Jason, joins the program from the Copper Valley. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jason.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess a point came up as the conversation went. I'd like to point out for trail development and on right-of-ways that the utilization of pipeline corridors seems like a very nice medium. I've seen it used in Anchorage. It's a wonderful case of public intimate domain where it's not anything corporate, but it's grandmothers taking their grandkids and they take a shortcut down from a section of Spinar down to a coastal trail. And it's joggers and it's professionals going down there and running their dogs so they can get to the coastal trail. And it would seem that between the public use and also the fact that an improved trail system along a pipeline corridor, improved security, allows security personnel to operate more efficiently, that it seems that you could find places of connecting these communities through these pipeline corridors and developing it that way.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course, it's not legal, is it? Is it, Jason? I don't think it's legal, but...
that's what's so wonderful about it, because unfortunately in this situation it's the soft laws are grandmothers and grandchildren and kids just going to ride their bicycles. So it would be interesting if the administrators came together and found means of finding an arbitration and a medium.
Jason, the public use Jason, I'm absolutely loving your call and thank you for it.
Can I give one more note? The one thing I wanted to add on trail development, one of the things as an industry standard from the early turn of the century was using raised wooden planks, both in the to not have environmental impact in the tundra of the peninsula, and then I saw them used in the rainforests of Washington, and I found that the raised wooden trails do not distract from the experience, allow access for elderly and children, and a really nice way of mitigating environmental concerns. So those are my two statements, and thank you for taking my call.
All right, Jason. Yeah, thanks a lot. I think, Troy, you would probably echo that about sometimes you just got to get it up off of that wet surface.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of different ways to do that, and simple planks are a great way, especially if you have the material that can get it there. Other times you have to be a little bit more intensive. If you have Army Corps of Engineers or other regulations you need to deal with, sometimes you actually need to get a raised boardwalk or something like that. But I know that's gone on a lot in your state, because obviously it's a big issue there in a lot of areas. And one great project I know of was done in Homer, where they did a turnpike or a puncheon to raise it up. I think it was with the finished surface was gravel, but log lined, and really, really good work.
Yeah, I would like to see sooner or later that the coastal trail finally get finished, and they would probably need some sort of methodology of that sort in order to take it down onto the coastal marshes. Patrick joins program from Anchor Point. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Patrick.
Hi, guys. Great topic and so timely for the season. I was on maybe a new favorite trail this morning. First time, Diamond Creek State Park area. It's one of these that's very lightly funded, but it's near us. And volunteer work, again, echoing a couple of prior callers there, is so important. And they etched in a bike trail that I walked this morning, and it'll be bikeable. But again, it would love some more funding. And it's too bad that it is political, trail funding. Why is that? Because I think strong supporters from every party use and like trails. I don't understand why that's linked politically, and I wish it was separated so that we could tax appropriately and give back to the trails so that it was a little easier to span some of those wet sections you just mentioned. And that actually is one of my questions. What new stuff is out there? Because I know a two-plank walkway is so nice and seems like it's pretty easy to make from the local material there, but where you need to span wheelers or allow for bicycles, I just was curious what might be out there.
Troy, you got a couple of shorties on that?
Or maybe give your maybe make sure you guys give your conference details again, because that sounds so interesting.
Okay,
and
all right.
A piece I could add for you is Healy Ridge is in Denali National Park. It's in the front country, and it's one of those that you can do an hour or two or three and just keep going on the ridge as much as you'd like.
Yeah.
On the this is Steve Cleary. On the question of funding, I would like to say that there is, and the governor put it in his budget, funding this year to keep the recreational trails program, the RTP program, going, and that's through the state parks, and that's the main sponsor for our trails conference coming up. We've got a Rec Trails program grant for that, and it's a great program that's funded lots of trails all across the state and can fund trails in your community, and you can hear more about that at our trails conference next Thursday through Saturday. Registration details at alaska-trails.org.
Okay. No show on trails will be complete without somebody bringing up this problem of earbuds. Michael did it. Says, hey, you know, okay, so people are in a world of their own out there sometimes and don't even know you're coming. We're all seeing that. I don't think we have answers to that. The wet spanning, this split log thing, what else is there to do with that, Troy?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff, and it really comes down to the dollars involved. I mean, there are things called pin foundations. That's actually a brand name, and helical piers. A couple manufacturers make those, and these are methodologies of doing boardwalks, basically get things up off the ground a little bit by sinking these various types of piers into the ground. But if you want to just kind of research, if your listeners are interested, if they type in puncheon, P-U-N-C-H-E-O-N, or trail turnpike, anything of that nature, it'll come up with a lot of great images and a lot of great examples.
I'm loving it. Okay, Steve Cleary, one more time. When, where?
At APU next Thursday through Saturday, April 24th through 26th, over our nearly 50 breakout sessions. Check them out at alaska-trails.org.
All right. Thank you very much, Troy Daffin. Look forward to meeting you when you get up here.
Thank you.
And thanks to the folks at Public Radio KPCW in Park City. Thanks to Monica Goki, Dave Waldron, and I think I saw Tristan Sammons back there and Josh Edge. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Providence Imaging Center, offering 3D mammography since January 2014, technology that helps their radiologists detect breast cancer. Learn more at provimaging.com. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.